A famous writer once said, "Talent alone cannot make a writer. There must be a man behind the book, by birth and quality." As the only major Southern publishing house, Pelican Publishing believes that there is something valuable about our Southern way of life, about who we are, and about this place we call home. Something worth putting down in written word on the printed page for future generations. Pelican Publishing is proud of our contribution to helping preserve the history and heritage and culture of the South, and we welcome submissions from authors new and experienced here at Pelican. Our family of authors includes some of the best-known names in Southern heritage today, plus a whole lot more. So whether it's about history or heritage, travel or trees, cooking or culture in general, if it's about the South, Pelican should be your first choice. Visit our website at epelican.com to find out about submitting your own book for consideration. Pelican Publishing, giving Southern authors a better choice. All right, welcome to another Pelican Pages segment here at Dixie Broadcasting. And as you know, many Wednesday nights we bring you a live interview with a new author from Pelican Publishing Company, and sometimes we rebroadcast some that we've already done. And we are pleased to have another Pelican author with us tonight via the telephone line, and it's Mr. Steve Cottrell. Steve, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
That's close enough, Ray.
Okay. Steve is the author of a book from Pelican Publishing entitled The Civil War in Texas and the New Mexico Territory. And I guess, Steve, by way of getting started, just tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from originally.
Well, I'm an ordinary guy and with an ordinary job, and I live in southwest Missouri. Around the vicinity of Joplin. I grew up in Joplin. I live in Carthage, Missouri, about 15 miles from Joplin, and I work in Joplin as a salesman. And that's about it, Ray.
Well, tell us how you became interested in the war in general and this particular topic about the war in Texas and New Mexico territory in particular.
Well, I've always been fascinated by the Civil War, partly because I had ancestors in that war, as a matter of fact, ancestors on both sides. And it helps me relate to how it sort of depended upon where a person grew up and who his friends and family were as to which side he wound up on, really.
Well,
and
right.
I've always been interested in Texas, and New Mexico territory, that whole region in the Southwest. My family used to vacation in Texas, and my wife's got some cousins down there. As a matter of fact, I'll say hello to Richard and Sandy Holmes in Irving, Texas. We've got some friends, Pastor Robert Cox and the good folks at Living Waters Fellowship in Chico, Texas. And it's just a fascinating area down there. The whole history of it is amazing.
Now, Steve, I'm holding a copy of the book here in my hand, and folks, it's about 140 pages, extremely readable, and, you know, there really is not that much material out there about this particular region during the war. And folks, by the way, while we're talking to Steve on the broadcast tonight, you can actually take a look at the book on the Pelican website and read a short description of the book there on their site. It's epelican.com, and you can click on the browse button up there at the top and type in the title or part of the title, Civil War in Texas and the New Mexico Territory by Steve Cottrell, and it'll pull that book up there, and you can not only look at the book, but you can actually order it at a reduced price there on the Pelican website. And Steve, I would guess that like most of the Pelican books, folks can probably find this book sitting on the bookshelf in most of the national chain bookstores all across America. Is that right?
That's true. And if you don't see it there, you can certainly ask about it, and they can order it for you, or you can order directly from Pelican, no problem.
Well, great. Now, I know a little bit more, well, actually a lot more, after having read your book than what I knew about the war in that particular area before reading it. And that whole war that was fought west of the Mississippi River, particularly in the Texas-New Mexico Territory, was a totally different war than what we usually think of when we think of the Army of Northern Virginia fighting Grant and the Army of the Potomac. Tell us a little bit about what made that war different, Steve.
Well, Ray, it was a frontiersman's war. It was this was the West, you know, and it had a rough style and bitter flavor all its own. A lot of times, especially in guerrilla actions out here, a battle would end when the other side was totally wiped out. So, it was a little less of a gentleman's war than the war back east. Yet at the same time, the actions tended to be smaller just because there were less people involved. But it was certainly a fierce and horrific part of the war. Some people consider it a backwater of the major action, and certainly in many ways it was. But it's a story that needs to be told because the men who sacrificed everything they had out here sacrificed just as much as the men in the East.
Now, what was the significance to the war there in the West? Obviously, they weren't just fighting because they didn't like each other, although I'm sure that was a big part of it. What was some of the significance to the battle actually taking place there?
Well, the war in, especially in New Mexico territory, involved a Confederate master plan to eventually establish sort of an empire in the West involving the Colorado gold fields and the California gold fields, and it all came to a head in New Mexico territory with Texas troops marching out of San Antonio on a 700-mile march across West Texas to the New Mexico territory border, and it was a very dramatic thing. Some people, you know, with the general public might be familiar with the movie The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which it had a backdrop of this New Mexico campaign, so that kind of gives you an idea about the region of the country involved in this this campaign out west.
Right. Yeah, nothing was close to anything in that campaign, was it?
No, everything was spread so far apart, and one of your major worries, other than the enemy itself, was where the next water hole was, and you know, things like that, just basic survival in a harsh terrain.
Now, being out in the West like this, it definitely had some very colorful individuals and groups of people involved in the engagements. Tell us who some of the principal players were, both individuals that were involved and also some of the different ethnic groups that we really didn't see in as large a numbers back in the East as we do here in the West.
Right. Well, there was a lot of interesting characters involved. One of the most fascinating is the leader of the Confederate campaign in New Mexico territory, General Henry Hopkins Sibley, who had already made a name for himself in military circles as the inventor of the Sibley tent and the Sibley stove, which were Confederate, well, actually also U.S. bivouac items used widely in camps on both sides. He was a West Point graduate and a veteran of the Seminole War and the Mexican War. But by the time of the Civil War, his better days of glory were behind him, and he had that old demon rum on his back. Hard liquor had sort of made him, in the words of a contemporary, a walking whiskey keg. But anyway,
I've met a few people like that.
Quite an interesting fellow. The Union commander, Colonel and later Brigadier General before the campaign was over, Edward R.S. Canby, serious, studious West Point graduate who later in his career would wind up being the only general officer killed during the Indian campaigns after the Civil War, as a matter of fact. But anyway, interesting people. Besides the major officers, you have many colorful lesser characters involved. And talking about ethnic groups, a lot of people don't realize that Hispanics were at all involved in the American Civil War. But by golly, they have a Civil War heritage too, such as Lieutenant Colonel Manuel Chavez and his New Mexico Volunteers in the U.S. Army, which helped win the Battle of Glorieta Pass for the United States, and then men such as Colonel Santos Benavide and his Confederate Irregulars under Colonel Rip Ford that served the South. A lot of Hispanic men, some of them in the 1st New Mexico Volunteers under a fellow by the name of Kit Carson, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
Kit Carson was out in that region of the country in the middle of all that campaign as a colonel, and had many Hispanics under his command. So that's a rather unique and interesting thing involved in the war out here, as well as black troops of the 62nd Colored Infantry. And you find so many interesting people involved in these stories. It was a tragic and hard time in our history, but yet there's so many adventure stories. It's really fascinating.
Now, the Indian Wars were kind of intertwined with the war between the states at the same time, and on after the war between the states had ended, I know, but how did the Indian Wars kind of contribute to, or how were they kind of working along at the same time as the war between the states? And tell us about the Native Americans there that actually may have been involved in the war between the states effort themselves.
Okay. Well, when you had a situation early in the war out in Texas and the whole region there where Confederates were taking over U.S. military installations and a lot of U.S. troops were being withdrawn back east, you had a shortage of soldiers that used to be guarding the area down there against Indian raids and Mexican banditos. You had a shortage of these troops, and so the Native American raids picked up. They increased their war activities in an effort to drive out the white settlers.
Now, were these primarily Indians who had been forced onto reservations already, or were still free-ranging Indians?
A lot of them out in this part of the country we're talking about were free-ranging Indians at that time. You had the Kiowas and Comanches, the Apaches, like the famous Chief Cochise was active in that time period. And then you also had displaced Indians like the Kickapoo trying to pass through the region peacefully but being mistaken for hostiles and attacked.
Mm.
It was a very confusing and tragic situation. The old story of the clash of cultures out west.
Well, there certainly was plenty of that going on with all those different people together there. I can imagine how easy it would be to mistake someone who was maybe an innocent bystander for a potential enemy, and you really didn't have a whole lot of time to sit around and wait to see which they were, I guess.
Yes, indeed, that's true.
Now, folks, we're talking to Steve Cottrell about his book with Pelican Publishing entitled Civil War in Texas and New Mexico Territory. And Steve, I don't want to give away by any means all the good stuff in the book, but one of, I think, the most interesting battles in this particular region during the war, and you mention it in your book, is the Battle of Sabine Pass. And I know I've heard some speakers in the Southern Heritage circles refer to this as the Thermopylae of the Confederacy. Do you think that's a fair name to give it? And maybe tell us a little bit about it, if you don't mind.
Well, yes, you could call it the Thermopylae of the Confederacy in one sense, because when you talk about 46 men holding off an invading force of 5,000,
wow,
it's certainly a horrendous situation. But the amazing thing is, they didn't lose, they won. they drove off the invading force, and that's what's truly astounding about it. These guys were mainly Irish American fellows of the Jeff Davis Guard, they called themselves, or they for short they called themselves the Davies, in the First Texas Heavy Artillery, and they were manning a fort there at Sabine Pass, which is located right there on the mouth of the Sabine River between Texas and Louisiana, a very strategic point. And the federal government decided that they're going to attempt to invade Texas. This was their first attempt to invade Texas with a federal army. And they had 5,000 in a huge fleet of troop transports and four warships and some gunboats. And they headed for that area. And these 46 guys, they've been target practicing, by golly, in their spare time. And when the warships started to move up the channel there, they opened fire, and they just gave them heck, you know. They started striking their targets left and right. And before you know it, the whole federal plan was ruined. It was astounding. The federal commander, General Franklin, you know, was observing everything through his binoculars, and he came to the conclusion there's simply no way to land his troops under these conditions, or to move on in and to land his army. And they wound up just turning tail and chugging back through the Gulf of Mexico to New Orleans, where they came from. The federal army controlled New Orleans at the time. But these 46 Irish Americans, led by Lieutenant Dick Dowling, who was a saloon keeper, was his day job. But anyway, they had inflicted 100 U.S. casualties. They had captured 350 sailors, and they had captured two Union warships. And they didn't have any casualties themselves. It was truly,
wow,
astounding.
That is definitely amazing.
Now, September 8th of 1863 is when that happened, and it was one of the few times during the war that a special medal was struck to give to the brave soldiers of the South who defended Fort Griffin in Texas.
Wow.
Something to be proud of in Texas heritage, certainly.
Yeah, certainly. Now, did the war pretty much play out about the same time in the Texas-New Mexico territory that it ended back east, or was it a different time period?
Well, the New Mexico campaign ended rather early in the overall time frame of the Civil War. By the spring of 62, the Confederates had lost their campaign and were retreating back to San Antonio. Out of the original, originally there were 3,500 that marched out of San Antonio, and there was 1,500 that made it back. You know, their main problem, they won about every single action they fought out there, but they had a bit of bad luck. The Union column, which Interestingly enough, that Lieutenant Colonel Manuel Chavez and his New Mexico volunteers were the guides of a federal column under Major Shivington that found the main Confederate wagon train, the supply train.
Uh-huh.
All their food, their extra, supplies, all their ordnance, were destroyed completely. They had no more supplies left, and they had to retreat. But anyway, that ended rather early in the Civil War. But yet, actions continued in Texas itself along the coast. There was another attempt by the federal government to land another Union army, and they did land at the mouth of the Rio Grande. 6,000-man army landed near Brownsville. They took some points along the coast, and they moved up the coast in some troop transports and gunboats. And it looked like they were going to take Galveston, but all of a sudden the Union plans were altered by it was simply an administrative error in Washington. They canceled the whole campaign and diverted the troops elsewhere. So now
I know at the time that Lee surrendered in Virginia, there was some talk of trying to attempt to, instead of him surrendering, trying to get him together with the soldiers that were there in Texas and the Army of the Trans-Mississippi. Was there a significant amount of Confederate soldiers still there that late in the war?
Their numbers were dwindling, and most of them were in the vicinity of Houston and Sabine Pass and San Antonio, and then down at in the Brownsville area along the Mexican border. And nevertheless, the so-called last battle of the Civil War did take place in Texas, interestingly enough. The Battle of Palmito Ranch, and it was a very small affair. Actually, technically, it would be a skirmish, but the Confederates did win. The Confederates didn't realize Lee had already surrendered back east, and they captured over 100 Federals in the action, and their prisoners informed them, "Hey, you guys, the war's really over," and. A few days later, arrangements were made to disband the Confederates down there. There was an interesting story about a column of Missouri and Arkansas cavalry that decided to set up a Confederate colony in Mexico, and they passed through Texas on their way down to Mexico under General Joe Shelby. That's a fascinating story there.
Right.
The general public might be familiar with the movie The Undefeated, an old John Wayne movie with John Wayne and Rock Hudson, and that was loosely based on that story. It didn't work out. They did go down to Mexico, though, but the colony down there didn't work out, of course, and the South did not rise again. So.
Right. Well, at least not yet.
Right.
Now, after writing this book, Steve, and again, obviously, it's a book that there's not a lot of written material on other than your book. What is it that you hope folks take away after reading the book, and what do you hope its long-term importance is?
Well, I'd like them to learn that there was more to the American Civil War than what happened in Virginia or Tennessee, and that the brave men that fought out west, they sacrificed a lot too, and Texas is particularly interesting because it was never successfully invaded during the war, and therefore its citizens were spared the hardships of other Southern states suffered, and Texas, the economy down there remains solvent because of trade with Mexico. So, most other southern states had a destroyed economy. Texas did not. They kept plugging along. And it's just an amazing story of outstanding military feats of courage and daring in an adventurous and inspiring chapter of the American Civil War. And one of the things I've written some other little paperbacks on Civil War history, and one of the most useful things that I take away from it myself is an enduring respect for what our ancestors went through. And you can actually use these amazing stories in your everyday life simply as a source of inspiration to help you overcome your own personal problems in everyday life, because you know what incredible hardships your ancestors went through during this time frame.
And you know, that's something I don't think many of us stop to think about in our day-to-day lives, but there certainly is a lot of truth to that. Well, Steve, this is a Pelican Pages interview, and I guess one of the things we normally like to ask before we finish up an interview is, how did you come to choose Pelican as the publishing company for this book?
Well, I enjoyed reading Pelican books for years, and they just always had such fascinating stories of regional history, and this seemed to be the sort of thing that I thought that would fit right in with their series, you know.
Yeah, well, they obviously thought so, and I think so too after having read it. Any other books that you have published?
Yes,
I know you mentioned the paperbacks there.
Yeah, I've got a few others with Pelican, along with a fine writer that just recently passed away last October, bless his soul, Philip Steele. I co-authored with him Civil War in the Ozarks. And also, I'm author of Civil War in the Indian Territory, which mainly involves present-day Oklahoma, and also Civil War in Tennessee. So you might check those out, too.
Yeah, we'll do that. In fact, we've had a number of listeners who have emailed us from time to time asking about, specifically about the Cherokee Braves who fought for the Confederacy. So I'm guessing you probably at least mentioned those somewhat in your book about Oklahoma. Is that right?
Yes. In Civil War in the Indian Territory, there's a tremendous amount of information about the Cherokees' involvement in the Civil War, and especially their very illustrious Commander Brigadier General Stan Waite.
Yes.
Whom I had the privilege of meeting one of his descendants just recently, back in October. Who's also named Waite by the... Well, his middle name is Waite.
Is that
so,
right?
Yeah. Very nice guy.
Well, I'll just have to talk to Miss Kathleen there at Pelican Publishing, and we'll see if we can't get a preview copy of that book, so I'll be at least a little bit educated when we get you back on, and we'll talk about that one too then.
Well, great.
Well, Steve, thank you very much for being with us on this Pelican Pages interview, and anytime we can be of any help to you, we hope that you'll give us a call and let us know what we can do for you here.
Well, thanks a lot, Ray.
Yes, sir. Folks, we've been talking to Steve Cottrell about his book Civil War in Texas and New Mexico Territory. Folks, it is one of the very few books that you'll find on this particular aspect of the war, regionally speaking. And as you would imagine, with this taking place on the frontier, the individuals and the events in this are just as colorful as any Western television movie you've ever seen. So you need to get a copy of the book. It's about 140 pages, extremely readable and very interesting from one page to the next. You can pick it up at just about any best-selling bookstore that's out there. If they don't have it, they can get it for you within about 2 days' time. Or you can go to the Pelican website and actually order it online at a reduced price. And again, the Pelican website there is epelican.com. And I'm your host, Ray McBerry, and that's going to do it for another Pelican Pages interview. And We just hope you'll continue listening to the Pelican Pages interviews. We try to have those every Wednesday night, approximately 10 p.m. Eastern time. So join us next week for another Pelican Pages interview, and for the rest of the evening, we've got plenty more good Southern music all night long. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is Craig Hendricks from the Free South Band. For good Dixie music all day long, I listen to Dixie Broadcasting WDXB. Smoke from the fire in his front yard. Rabbit dogs howling out back.